Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidrishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Verse 21. Desha kopi nabhaseta,
Desha kopi nabhaseta,
Yaditar, Yastvadeshabhak, Sarvadesha prakliptyaiva, Sarvadesha prakliptyaiva, Sarvagatvannatusvataha, Deshaha kopi na bhaseta. That kaha api, it really functions as one word, so we just say kopi, we don't say kaha api. Okay, so Deshaha kopi na bhaseta, yadi tarhi astu adesha bhak. Let's do that one again. Tarhi astu adesha bhak. Tarhi astu adesha bhak. Then sarva desha prakliptya eva. Again, say sarva desha prakliptya eva. Sarva gatatvam natu svataha. Deshaha kopi nabhaseta yadi. It says, yadi means if. Kopi is an indefinite article. So if there is space somewhere, if there is some space, if I say kopi, if there is some space, it's indefinite, there's some space. But when you negate an indefinite article, it becomes an absolute. So it would be like with kopi, when there is no space at all, space is not there, na kopi. When there isn't any space, when there is no space at all, deshaha kopi na basate. When space, now this is that word ba, that is the such an important word, ba or bas. It means that it appears, it's manifest, it presents itself to you. So if there is no space there, if there's no appearance of space, if space is not something that's present to be perceived, if it's not presenting itself to you. So it's just a little bit different way of saying if there's no space there. Right? It means the space itself is not something that is available for your perception. It's not shining. So it says if there's no space at all that's just shining, it means that's available, that's presenting itself for your as an object of your perception. Like that, if there's no space there that's shining, tarhi astu adesha bhak. Tarhi, then he says, if that's so. So this is like a question. Okay, if you should say, if we put this in like a question, if you should say that, you know, when the creation is a manifest condition, or when the mind is totally silent, totally inactive, as in the previous verse, if all of the vrittis are kind of withdrawn from any type of objectification, and in the previous verse it says, then the only thing shining there is the Atma, is the Sakshi. From the standpoint of the buddhi, what is perceived or manifest in that buddhi is only the non-dual self. It's only the Atma, it's only the Sakshi, it's only the self. But if that's all that's being experienced, say the mind is totally withdrawn, and then there's no space being experienced at all. There's no space presented when the mind is withdrawn like that. It says, then what happens? So the answer is, he answers, If there is no space at all which is being experienced, then astu adesha bak. Then let there not be any experience of space. If the space isn't there as an object, as an experience that you're having, there is no space, that's fine. Let there be no space. Space is mitya. Space has no special order of reality different from all of the other objects in the creation. Time, space, objectivity, desha, kala, vastu. Vastu is anything that can, any object that can be objectified is a vastu, even if whether it's an emotion or any type of object. Space pervades the creation. Time pervades the creation too, in the sense of change pervading the creation, and the marking of change is what we call time. So the desha kala pervade the creation, and then there are all of the objects within space. Those are the vastu. So desha kala vastu. So he says, if when the mind is resolved or is just simply abiding without any particular objectification, then there's no experience of space. Fine. If that's so, and there's no experience, then let there be no experience of a space. Adesha bak. Then let there not be the experience of space. So he says, sarva desha prakritya eva sarvagatatvam. He says, sarva desha prakritya. Prakritya means by the imagination or by the projection of space, of any and every space, sarva desha, by the projection of that space, means by the objectification of that in the buddhi, with that space being projected, then that space is sarvagatatvam. We could say like this, when the space is there, okay, then for the sakshi, for the atma, there is all pervasiveness of space. Wherever space is, so like this, say if you have, when they say what any place where the space is, what they mean like is like, in this world that I'm perceiving through my sense organs, space is. Space is presents itself along with the rest of the creation. Okay? In your imagination, space is there. Right? Space is there, pervasive to the entire imagination. It's sarvagatatvam. It's all pervasive, and the sarvagatatvam here means the sakshi, the conscious being, pervades all of that space. Space is the most subtle of elements. Space is all pervasive, and that all pervasive space is illumined, as long as it's there, it's illumined by consciousness. Right? And an object within space, that is illumined by consciousness. Everything is illumined by consciousness. So he says, the Atma, the self, has this sarvagatatvam, the state of being all-pervasive, when that space is projected, when that space is there. But not to swataha, not from its own standpoint. From its own standpoint of the Atma, the Sakshi, the Chidvapahu, the conscious being, there's never any space. There's no space at all. Space is not an attribute of the self. The self is pure, non-dual conscious being. It is not spatial. Because if we say, the Brahman, the self, yourself is all pervasive, the self isn't all pervasive from its own standpoint. But if you have an imagination, the space is all pervasive in reference to that imagination, and the consciousness pervades the entire imagination. So if consciousness is all pervasive of space, and space pervades the entire imagination, because space is the most subtle of elements, and that is its swarupa, right? Is that space itself, and that's why space is sometimes used as a drishtanta, limited drishtanta for the nature of the self, because space is all pervasive and everything exists within space. So it's a nice drishtanta, it's a nice illustration that we can use to point out something about the nature of the self. But the self pervades space. The self is more subtle, right? In fact, the space, air, fire, water, earth, all are mitya. So in fact, there is no, it's not even appropriate to say there is no distance between space and the mitya creation. as though the mithya creation is something other than the Satchitatma. It is not other than. You know, Swamiji will say sometimes like this, which is, I've always found it useful. He says, you know, really, it is not that the clay pervades the pot. Does the clay pervade the pot? No. It doesn't pervade the pot because there's nothing but clay there. You know? And so even for me to say that the self pervades the awareness and everything that is in it is, in a sense, a misnomer. It's not quite correct. And yet we say that. We talk like that. But in the end, we have to pull that back. We have to pull it back. Because what is mithya has no separate being to make it other than consciousness to have to pervade it. Right? Because conscious being is the very substance that is there. It's the clay, so to speak. Okay, so here he says, when the maya projects, and say there's a projection of space, and of the space is everywhere in terms of whatever is projected, whether we're talking about the creation, we're talking about a dream, we're talking about an imagination, we're talking about any experience where there is space. The space is always pervasive of that experience, and I, as the Atma, am all pervade space. I am all pervasive. In reference to what I'm pervading from the standpoint of what I'm pervading. So this, we can say from the space, the infinite space, or the infinite space that pervades the whole creation, there's no place where I am not. Space is all pervasive, but I'm all pervasive of space. There's even an example in one of the Upanishads, again, I believe it's the, I'm not sure, I think it might be the Katha. We haven't gotten to it yet, if it is. The example is that if I look at the moon, right, I'm looking at the moon, right? As I look at the moon is a long ways away, right? So now I look at the moon, but when I look at the moon, the self is already there. So say there's a race. There's a race between the buddhi and the self. If I look at the moon, the self is already there, right? If I look at the edge of the universe, the self is already there. Because there is nothing in the whole infinite universe and the multi-dimensions of the universe that is not the self. It is really not that the self pervades the whole thing. It's that the self is the whole thing in terms of the what we call vivarta upadana karana, the material cause that never goes through any type of modification at all to change into or become the universe, but it is the very substance of the universe. And so that just makes you, I mean, it kind of blows your head apart. In Chandogya it says, as you understand this, your brains will blow apart. Your head will blow apart. There's a verse like that. Because our experience of time and space and distance and all of these things and dimension, you know, size, these things have, you let all of them go in reference to the nature of yourself. But the nature of yourself is their material cause, and they are mithya. The time, space, all maya creation exists in a causal form in Brahman, in a causal form, and that causal form continually projects the creation and resolves the creation, projects the creation and resolves the creation. Being, having for its being the non-dual self, one without a second, when that maya projects the creation with so huge, where does this hugeness go? Where does this huge creation? Does it kind of escape the self? You know, because it's so big, and the self is free of space. It has nothing to do with dimension. So you think, well, this huge creation comes out of this non-dual being. Now, that the non-dual conscious being that is free from time and space from its own standpoint does not make it big or small. It means it's the only thing that is there There is no inside or outside. There is no, nothing is outside of non-dual conscious being. It has nothing to do with space. There is no space. There is no time. There is no objectivity. All of that belongs to Maya. So when you think, if I ask you to have an imagination of any nice imagination you want to have, the whole time, space, imaginal creation situation comes immediately, and it has its own size, its own dimension. It depends on your imagination, you know. But there's nothing that can bleed outside of the one non-dual reality, you know, which contains that contains everything that is without itself having any type of duality. So here, in this last part, he says, the sarvagatattvam of the Atma, of the Sakshi, the being all-pervasive, the Sakshi, the Chidvapu, the conscious being that is me, being all-pervasive, is only from the standpoint of this projection, whether it be the Ishwara's projection, the whole Maya Upadi, or your imagination, or what. The sarvagatattvam, the all-pervasiveness of the self, will definitely be there, right? But from its own standpoint, as just the conscious being, there is no time or space. So here in the verse, he kind of says, almost tongue in cheek, if there's no space there, you know, if you've withdrawn that, there's no space there, says, like, it's like, what would happen then? How could that be? The answer is, if there's no space there, then there's no experience of space. That's all. Everything that is experienced in Maya, from space, time, all objectivity, is experienced because of the sattva, and so it is known. This is the Maya. It is known, it is known, it is known. If the space is there, it is known. If the space is there, it is known. It's not there. It's not known. That's all. It has nothing to do with the self. It has to do with its own presence. If the space is there, if the object is there, if the different lokas are there, if they're there, then they're shining, right? Because of the self, because of the nature of the self, which is illumining the sattva that pervades the creation or pervades the upadi. If those are withdrawn, as you withdraw your mind, you're withdrawing the experience of the creation, right? Then what? Then creation is not experienced. Say in deep sleep, you withdraw your mind in deep sleep, right? It goes into a state of what we call a causal condition. It goes into its causal condition. And therefore, none of the subject-object relationships or none of the time-space objectivities, the knower-known relationships, are withdrawn because the mind is withdrawn into a causal condition. And so, in that, when that happens, you say, oh my God, when I go to sleep, you know, these experiences are not there. You say, right. These experiences are not there. These experiences exist in Maya. Right? They go into causal condition, they're not being experienced. That has nothing to do with you, with your being. Your being, in fact, is never experiencing anything. From the standpoint of just the Atma, now this is tricky, but it's very nice also. I said this the other day, I think, but I really love it. Does the clay have the experience of the pot? No. It only has the experience of clay. Here, the conscious being has what is its experience? Conscious being. The experience of the self is the experience of the self. It is self-evident. To have any other kind of experience, the upadi, some aspect of the Maya upadi, the Jiva upadi, the Ishwara upadi, has to be there, and then that is known. If it's not there, then what? Then it's not known. That's all. Nothing else. Nothing happens to you. It's totally irrelevant to your being whether this thing is there or not. If it's there, it's known. If it's not there, it's not known. It has nothing to do with my own nature, which is always known. The me, myself, is always known Because not as an object, not subject to object, because I am self-evident. I am self-shining. Right? So this, my own presence, is the very material cause of the whole creation, never changes at all. Now this is why, say you have the creation in the form of this universe as Ishwara, the whole Maya Upadi, or you have your own little creation in terms of the imagination, or you have the creation that comes from the unconscious in terms of the dream. These are all little creations that are made of space, air, fire, water, earth. These creations come and they go. Like we've used the example of, you have a dream, it's a real vivid dream, it's so real while you're in it. You wake up, it is gone. Nothing has happened. There's nothing has happened because it never had any being in the first place. And so its appearance or non-appearance is irrelevant to the self, to what is actually there. And so you wake up from a dream and this whole wonderful, whatever it was, Maya, you know, that is so real and so wonderful, so amazing, it goes and nothing happens, because what is actually there in terms of being and consciousness, you know, is totally asanga. It has no attachment to it whatsoever, because this Maya has no being to be attached to. There's only one being there, and that being is my own self. So here, yes, we have, you know, I pervade the dream. From the standpoint of the dream, I pervade the creation as Ishwara from the standpoint, you know, from the standpoint of the creation. I pervade all of my experiences, all of my vrittis. Yes, from the standpoint of the vritti, not from the standpoint of me. Me, I am just one non-dual me. And I'm not big or small, I'm all there is. And even to say all there is, your mind wants to go, oh my God, I must go out forever. Because we only think of all there is, the biggest thing. That's why in the One Upanishad it says, you know, it is neither big nor small. Or it is bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. It has nothing to do with distance. Distance has to do with space. So from my own standpoint, there is no sense of pervading anything. There is only me, conscious being. And when we meditate, after really maybe the next meditation, we'll see what comes, but I need to work on that, and you can work on it yourself also when you're just differentiating your own being, just being with your own being. You just let the buddhi ask, you know, what size am I? What size am I? Just being with yourself. And you realize it's not even that, oh, I'm no size. It's that that's a totally irrelevant question. It's totally irrelevant. It's inapplicable. It's, it doesn't apply. The question doesn't apply. I simply am. And just, there's another tricky thing when you're focusing on yourself, because so often you're focusing on yourself from the standpoint of the vritti. And so there's a dimensionality that comes, like a pervasiveness that comes in reference to the vritti. But when you're just, the buddhi is focusing, gently focusing on your own presence, there has to be a giving up of the spatial nature of the vritti. That gets given up because you're just focusing on your own being. But as long as the vritti is there, there is your own being and the, what we call like the chittabhasa of the vritti. It's like there's a reflection in the vritti that is dimensional, and there is the non-dimensional me. And so that's a subtle distinction that has to be made. As long as my buddhi is not totally just overwhelmed by the nature of myself, where there is no kind of a vritti that is present, focused totally on myself. That's what we call savikalpa samadhi. The vritti is not focused on anything else. It is only absorbed in myself, but the outlines of the vritti are still present. That's savikalpa. There's still a knower-known relationship there in the Sevikalpa, even though the only content in the vritti is my own being. It's not like there's me and then there's thoughts flowing, you know. There's only my own content, and yet the borders of the vritti are there. When that is held for a bit, the mind is overwhelmed, kind of like a candle flame held up to the sun. The power or bigness of the sun, whatever you want to say, totally overwhelms the candle flame, so you can't see it. You can only see the sun. That's nirvikalpa. There's no subject-object duality at all. And then, just as your own self, there is nothing there about size or not size. There's just only me. And that's different. It's not only me, big me or small me. Because size and all of this belongs to Maya. There's just only simply me, the very me that is completely, wholly, experientially is self-evident here right now as me. The me is never covered. If you think it's being covered, that's a vritti. That's a vritti. And the vrittis, of course, can cover it in many ways. If you're identifying yourself as a shanta vritti, now, here I am, so peaceful, ananda, so beautiful, but all this energy, how it keeps going away. It's one of the very popular questions in my era. When will I just be there? It means you're identifying with the shanta vritti, right? You're not the shanta vritti. And so, but no matter what the vritti is, there can be subtle identification with the vritti, and then there's a sense of pervasion, you know. But from your own standpoint, there's just plain, simple me. One way to count as though counteract that, you know, is to notice it, the pervasion, and what in this pervasion of awareness, you can say, is me that is free of that kind of expansion that is caused by the vritti. Anyway, we'll do some meditations on it, we'll see. Let's go to the next verse.
Om antar bahirva sarvam va, antar bahirva sarvam va, yandesham parikalpayet, yandesham parikalpayet, buddhistadeshagasakshi, buddhistadeshagasakshi, tathavastushu yojayet, tathavastushu yojayet.
Now he extends this. We've already talked about this, but we'll see it at the end of the verse. Antar, so antaha bahihi va, sarvam va, yam desham parikalpayet, buddhihi tad deshagaha sakshi tata vastushu yojayet. Antar, inside, bahihi, outside, so inside, va, or outside, sarvam, va, or everywhere, so that which is inside, outside, or everywhere, sarvam, or in all places, literally, yam, desham, parikalpayet, buddhihi. Next slide. The buddhi parikalpayet imagines or creates that space, the space which is inside, outside, or in all places, everywhere. That belongs to, that is a product of the buddhi in terms of the vrittis, right? So in terms of whatever vritti you have, you can have inner space, outer space, or pervasive space. So that belongs to the vritti. Tad deshagaha sakshi. The sakshi, the witness, pervades that space. The space, whatever is being contained in the vritti, the space in the vritti, whether it's an inner space, an outer space, or a pervasive space, all space, the sakshi pervades that space. That space which is projected by the buddhi, or it exists in the vritti. Then it says, and similarly, tata, vastushu yojiyet, the same can be applied to all objects. So what he's doing now is, we were just first talking about space, because in any type of vritti, or in any type of externalized experience, there will be space there, right? So say you think of the Maya, as I've said, the Maya Upadi, or an imagination, or even a vritti. There is space there. Space, air, fire, water, earth. These elements in subtle form, definitely, they are there. So here he says, the sakshi pervades that space, whatever it may be. If there's space there, it is pervaded by the sakshi, by the witness, by consciousness. And in the same manner, it pervades all of the objects in the space. So you don't have an experience just of space, right? Oh, yes, definitely I pervade the space, but what about, it's kind of silly, but anyway, what about all of the objects, you know, in the space? Is consciousness pervasive of that too? Is consciousness what we call that vivarta upadana karana? Is it still the very material cause, the very being, you know, of the objects also? Or is it just of space and not the things in space? No, it's of the things in space too. You have to apply actually exactly the same logic. It pervades space and it pervades everything in space. Okay, so all of us do this. So let's do one more time. Okay. Yad yad vrupadi kalpyeta. Yad yad vrupadi kalpyeta. Buddhya tat tat prakashayan. Tasya tasya pavet sakshi. Tasya tasya pavet sakshi. Svato vak buddhya gocharaha. Svato vak buddhya gocharaha. Okay. Yad yad, whatever. Yad yad, instead of what, it's whatever. So whatever. For, not like, whatever.
Yada yada.
So whatever forms, etc., means whatever forms, kalpyeta buddhya, are imagined by the buddhi, are created, projected by the buddhi, kalpyeta buddhya, by the buddhi. So whatever forms, etc., means anything that exists within the vritti, any type of vritti, whatever is there, you know, which is the creation, which is created by the buddhi. Created means it's something which is taking place in the buddhi, either through the sense organs or through other types of experiences that require a vritti or that pervade the vritti. What I mean by here, by pervade, it's called the vritti vyapti. If with my eyes I look over here at the windows and the fireplace and the bricks and whatever, that scene is something which through my sense of sight and my mind using the sense of sight creates a vritti that is resonant or which is in this case a knowledge vritti, which if my eyes are working well will be an image of whatever I'm experiencing. So the buddhi takes on the image of what I'm experiencing. It's not like, you know, it brings the actual wall into my mind. So it creates an image of whatever it is I'm experiencing that is true to the object. That's what we call knowledge. So the buddhi is actually able to take on many different images. They can be generated by my memory. They can be meditative experiences. And they're all going to be images that are, unless there's something wrong with the pramana that's creating them, that is true to the actual experience. Which is interesting. So when the mind in a meditative state, you know, takes on, either has lots of flashing lights and colors and lots of pervasiveness, it's taking on something within the Maya Upadi, right? Or it's resolving, you know, being overwhelmed by the nature of the self. The vritti is there, right? The vritti is there reflecting that experience. And so that experience pervades the vritti. That's the idea of how this all takes place. So here, whatever forms, etc., are created by the buddhi through the different means of knowledge or faculties that the buddhi has available. Tat tat prakashayan, illumining making those things shine. So you have the yed, yed, tet, tet, okay? Mm-hmm. So illumining those things which are projected, such as form, etc., which are projected by the buddhi, tesya, tesya, bhavet, sakshi, swataha, for those things, for those things, the sakshi becomes the one, the luminary of those things, of each one of those things. Each one of those things are illumined by the sakshi. So that consciousness becomes the sakshi of each of those things. Okay? That is created by the buddhi. So then, but swataha vak buddhi agocharaha. But from its own standpoint, swataha, from its own standpoint, the buddhi and the speech and the buddhi, that sakshi is agochara. It's agochara to the buddhi and the vak and to everything. It means it is beyond the epistemological limits of whatever the buddhi can know or the speech can know. The Atma itself, the sakshi, is not something that can be objectified by the buddhi. It can't be objectified by the vak. Like with vak, for instance, if I say to you, if I were to say, you know, either just using the vak, I could say, like, imagine a beautiful forest. Those words have shakti. They have a shakti. It's root, what we call buddhi, where the immediate meaning of the word will immediately come. Vak has a lot of power. You just say it, and the knowledge to it, which is there in unmanifest, will come into manifestation. But what if I say Brahman? Brahman. Imagine Brahman. See Brahman, you know? You can't until Brahman is known. Once Brahman is known, once yourself is known, then the vak is more of a lakshan of pointing. It's a lakshan of pointing to, and in teaching we use it. We use speech, and we use the buddhi, but pointing to something, the something which illumines it. And there we have to use words as lakshanas, as pointers. But the immediate meaning of the word, or the range that the buddhi has for gaining experience, does not include the self, because the self is the luminary of the buddhi and the speech, for whom the range, what we call the visya, the range of its, how far it can reach, is only within duality. The buddhi and vak are meaningful within duality. Words have shakti, but all the words you have, and even sitting there in your memory banks, all of those words which have tremendous power, they have power over the things which you know, which you can know, which are here to be known within the creation. They can't reach the self because the self is their luminary. The self is the luminary of the speech and luminary of the buddhi. The buddhi's range is within the creation. The range of speech is within the things that can be known by the buddhi. They have to be able to be known. And so the self itself is agochara. It's not in the range of the buddhi and of speech. If we use the buddhi and use speech to gain this knowledge, which we do, the knowledge itself is not something which we gain. It's something which we call, which takes place through what we call ajnana nivritti. Ajnana nivritti means the negation of ignorance. We don't have a gain of knowledge. The self is already present, right? And so the whole teaching methodology is first off removing the removing the superimpositions that have caused me to take the self, which is ever present, to be the body, mind, sense organs because of self-ignorance. Self-ignorance is there. The self is ever-present. And so, naturally, I take the ever-present self to be something which my mind, which my buddhi, and the use of language and all of this, is able to know. Because I'm already here. Right? And so my means of knowledge are able to know this, this, and this. So now, What about this, this, and this, and this is the conscious being? These things that I can know, these things that I can experience, which one of them is me? Now, what if none of them are me? Then what am I going to do? Because my means of knowledge have hit a wall. Because the means of knowledge, all of them have their epistemological limits. What the buddhi can objectify, epistemological limits. I'm looking around for myself. Okay, here I am. I am an embodied person. Which part of this is me? Which part is me? Who is the me? Is it the whole body? And so when the body dies, or is there a subtle force and I start making things up? Is there a subtle soul that transmigrates or that goes to heaven? These are all belief systems that I either have to believe in, you know. But even then I say, but who goes to heaven? What goes to heaven? What is the relationship between this soul and me? What is the relationship? Because as far as I know, I am this. I am this. Or I am my mind, body, sense organs. What part of this is the soul? You know? And is the soul me? But if the soul is me, then there's something about me that has to be free of that which dies. That was in the Katha Upanishad. Nachiketas asked Lord Yama that. What about me survives the death of the body? What goes on? Is there something? What is it? You know? Because my means of knowledge that I have available within duality, all your means of knowledge, your sense organs and everything are only meant to give you knowledge of what can be objectified. Not of the self. The self, the me, I'm always there present. So all of the data that comes in, that's all mine. It all belongs to me. Right? Because I'm the one there who is gaining all of this data. But who is that? Who is that one? That becomes the question. And all of the means of knowledge I have available to me and all of the language that I have also, language is totally circumscribed by duality. You don't have any language or any words that go beyond duality. Like even the word consciousness. Consciousness doesn't mean non-dual consciousness. What about existence? We don't think of existence as a noun. We think existence as an attribute of something that exists. That exists. So yeah, that has existence. It exists. We don't think of the self being the existence, the being which is consciousness, non-dual conscious being, which is the kind of the adhishtana of the whole creation. Your vocabulary doesn't give you that. You know, and it can't. The vocabulary that you have is bound by this. So the vocabulary we have to use, we have to talk, we have to use, the teaching takes place in words, but the words have to be handled in such a way as to lose their limitations by pointing to which is that which is limitless. The buddhi also can't look for the self. It has to recognize the self as its very adhishtana, as the very me which the buddhi itself has taken to be me, and now that buddhi has to be differentiated from me. The very buddhi that takes itself to be me has to be differentiated from me. And that can scare it. Scares the buddhi. You know? Like I'm going to die. You're going to get rid of me. You know? I'm going to die and something else is going to be left. But nothing else is going to be left. The only thing that would be... The only thing that happens is the thing that is always, always there and has always been you will always be. You will always be. And the buddhi, as long as the buddhi there is there, it will be. But that viveka has to take place. So this is called the gaining of knowledge in Vedanta is called ajnana nivritti. It's eliminating those things you know that you've taken to be yourself. And as you shed them off, what is left is what? Just yourself. But what's so funny is that as we shed all of these things off by objectifying them, then I'm just there looking outward, you know. Yeah. you know, looking outward, and I've gotten rid of all of these things that were me. Now what? So there has to be a positive assertion at the right time that actually points the buddhi that has let go of everything, including itself, because objectifiable. Now that buddhi has to turn and recognize, you know, just conscious being, differentiated, which has always been there, will always be there, is there, whether the buddhi is there or not. It has that recognition, not of something new, but of something of that which has always been, but has been taken to be the buddhi and the body and the mind in this creation. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is known, it is known, it is known. What is the reality is this creation, and the isness and knownness are just little attributes that are stuck on them. When something is known, it is known. That thing is known. When something is there, it is, because there it is. You know what I mean? The satchit means nothing at all. It's just little words, you know, defining words thrown onto the objects. So this creation is what is. This creation is what is known. And that is turned totally on its head. What is isness itself. What is known is consciousness itself. The is-knownness is the satchitatma. And this whole creation is mithya, depending solely for its being on the satchitatma, which is me. So you can see how the words have to be utilized. All these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies, have to use the words in such a way as to kind of flip the vision, really. Instead of this being the reality, the self is the reality. Yeah. That's it. Mm-hmm. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.